Welcome to the PI Podcast, political insights for the palaging inis. I'm your host, Matt Ordonez, and this is our special October episode. Halloween is just around the corner, and among our favorite topics in this podcast is usually the Filipino monsters, you know, monsters and stories unique to the Philippine culture. And, you know, we talked about, of course, Trece, of course, horror movies in general in the past. But right now, we have a very special guest. You could say he is an expert in this topic on Philippine mythology, so, which includes, of course, the Aswang, Tikbalang, Kapre, Manananggal, all these things, but also gods and goddesses and creatures. And, of course, it's increasingly these creatures are becoming more and more iconic, you know, if not already, you know, with these new artworks. And it's also shown in his page, The Philippine Spirits. Highly recommend it. They do great work, which is not only artwork, but also stories and trivia dating back, of course, to the original sources of these local folklore and folk tales, etc. And it's a very rich discussion from a very rich material. So, of course, without further ado, let's get to our guest. You know, he is a graduate of UP Diliman for the degree of linguistics, who is with a, well, widely read thesis, which is also posted on the internet. That's entitled The Myths of the Philippines. And he has since, you know, founded the page Philippine Spirits. Okay. Please welcome John Carl Gaverza. Hi, Carl. Welcome to the PI Podcast.
Hi there, Matt. Happy to be here.
Okay. So, of course, you know, I've known you for a long time, even dating back to high school, but please tell, I'm sure, about your origin story on how you got into mythology. You've always been a wide reader ever since. But how did you get into studying and then compiling all these Philippine myths and stories together?
Well, like dating back to when I was a kid, I always liked reading about world mythologies. Mm-hmm. And there was this one book specifically called World Mythology by Arthur Cottrell. Mm-hmm. So it broke down like the myths of the Norse lands, Celtic, Greek, Roman, Indian. And I remember it had three entries from the Philippines.
Mm.
Two gods, one of them was Kadaklan, mm-hmm. if I remember right. What about one of the afterworlds of the Bagobo.
Mm.
And at that point, I didn't care about Philippine mm-hmm. mythology because I didn't really know mm-hmm. what I was missing out on.
Yeah.
So when I was in university, I took up linguistics. And there's this one class that spurred my origin story.
Mm-hmm.
It was ethnolinguistics, and I had to interview an informant about the numeral system of the Southern Subanen language.
Mm.
And that topic was incredibly boring.
Oh, okay.
The numeral system was pretty much the same as most number systems in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had like one paper and that would be it. But the informant that I had was from Layup in Zamboanga mm-hmm. del Sur.
Right.
And in between that interview, he talked to me about two creatures from his homeland called the Minamad Talon and the Tamad Talon. So the Talon is like a dog-like creature with the feet mm-hmm. of a human. So the 4 feet point backwards.
Right.
And it walks like a normal dog would.
Right.
So its fur is always black, and its face can range from like really human to really monstrous.
Mm-hmm.
And the appearance is the same if they're male or female.
Mm-hmm.
So the Minamad Talon is the male Talon. It's more of like a trickster spirit.
Mm.
They don't directly harm their victims, and they just want to scare them. So their targets are usually people not from the area, so mostly mm-hmm. foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
Not even like white foreigners, just people not from the area.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone shouts at it, it's cowardly, so it's going to run away.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting one for me was the Tamad Talon, which is the mm-hmm. female one. They eat their victims. So mm-hmm. from far away, they'll hear the victims will hear a scream.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when you know that the Tamad Talon is stalking you.
Mm.
So it also gave me an introduction to like the spirit mediums of the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
because part of the story is you can't fight a talon.
Mm.
You have to have the help of a gbelyan, gbelyan, which I'm probably pronouncing horribly.
Okay.
Their version of a babaylan.
Mm. What's the difference between a belyan and a babaylan?
Not much.
Okay.
Actually, they both have the spiritual wellness of the community that they serve.
Okay.
And they do fight supernatural creatures. Like, part of what I do is going around the Philippines and interviewing who I can about these topics. And about a few months ago, I went to Iloilo, where my dad's family is from, and I interviewed a babaylan.
Right.
Now, this is a modern babaylan. Like, she can do her rituals through the internet and fight
Like over
curses.
Zoom.
Yeah. I'm not
Wow.
kidding. That's really
okay.
what happens. And she can fight bad spirits or bad magic.
Even during the pandemic, right? Where everyone is. That's
Yeah.
amazing. Yeah. For fees, of course, right? How's their.
No. She only accepts donations. She doesn't accept payment.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
I want. Okay. I'm just
So,
curious if, yeah, how open are they for that? Maybe you can put the link to that. Are they open to that? Yeah.
I've actually introduced her to a few people that needed her help.
Okay.
And, well, I haven't heard any complaints. So
That's a,
I
yeah.
would hope that she solved their problems.
I mean, that is an interesting maybe basis of maybe a TV series or a web series. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Before we continue, I'm just maybe circle back a bit. So you started a degree in linguistics. So, and it, why is that? You know, why, what got you into linguistics? And how did that lead you to these, to creatures? Because linguistics and the mythology, it's, at least for me, it's not immediately obvious the connection there. So maybe can you explain how did that, how did the studying in linguistics lead to these studying mythologies and creatures, like scary man-eating creatures and spells and curses?
Well, linguistics was the program that I transferred into because originally I was in the LSU for like 3 terms.
Okay.
And I wanted something more that because like I took up international studies in LaSalle. And I had hoped that I would take up more languages than just Japanese, French, and those are the ones that I remember were available during my time. So I wanted to go to a place that pushed me more. Because,
Yeah.
like, there wasn't that big of a culture shock with me in LaSalle. But there was definitely one when I went to UP, even, like, applying.
Right.
So it honestly was just a personal challenge to myself to see if I could do it. And when, like, I told you the story about the Minamitalon, that was when I really started to get interested.
Yeah.
And the bridge between that and my work was really my thesis. Because for a long time, I had dreamed of absolutely nothing. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. It was when I read a book, Searching for the Pre-Hispanic Filipino by William Henry Scott.
Very important book.
Where I was like, oh man, these rituals and these creatures are something that I've never come across before. And then from there, I seeped into, and it was a miracle that they still had copies sold of Damiana Eugenio's Philippine Folk Literature Series, the
Right.
myths and the legends and the epics. So from there, I have a habit of cataloging things. Like when I did my thesis, I was like, okay, these are all the world cosmology myths or how the world came into being. And it's like, this is Ilocano, this is Kapampangan, this is Tagalog, this is
Right.
Maranao. And I was just like, it fueled the nerd in me.
Yeah, fuel the
Because
nerd.
I was the kind of person who would always like read walkthroughs of games. And even though there were spoilers, I'd be like, I didn't want to miss anything. And the thesis that I did is like, this is me trying to make people not to miss anything in this topic. But at a certain point also, like, I kept just adding and adding and adding to the thesis. And up to a certain point, I was just like, you got to step back, Carl.
Okay.
This is already way more than you wanted to.
Well, just for a moment, I do want to ask, though. I mean, when you were deciding to make this thesis, you know, your thesis is like myths of the Philippines, and it sounds very how you say, straightforward. And it makes gives the impression that before this volume that you did, there wasn't a lot, you know, of compilations. Now, maybe can you tell us, before you started this thesis, how our cataloging, you know, of these myths were, and then maybe where did it end? You know, I mean, like, how many did you eventually compile before you said stop? You know, because I'm sure okay, you couldn't do it forever, right? So yeah, go ahead.
I stopped in the thesis, but I still continued it on to this day.
Okay.
I have cataloged maybe about 3,000 mythical creatures and around 1,000 different gods and goddesses.
1,000.
But there weren't a lot of readily available academic works when I started. Yeah, by readily available, I mean on the internet and also for free. So when you talk about the progress that has been done in compiling these things, like I said, I talked about Amin Eugenio, William Henry Scott. One of the biggest sources that I used was Maximo Ramos's Creatures of Philippine Lower Mythology. And he has a 10-book series out there from Phoenix Publishing House. I don't know if they still have copies, but I got mine from a friend who very graciously donated it to me. But I found a copy of the works in the UP library. So kids, if you want to do research, not just in the library, but I'll talk about that later. There's also the Soul Book, which is, I got a copy of the Soul Book from one of the luminaries of Philippine myth makers. And it's by, forgot the first name, by Demetrio, a priest that did a lot of work on cataloging the folklore of the Philippines. Apart from the Soul Book, he also did an encyclopedia of Philippine folk beliefs and customs. So that is hard to get. When I wanted a copy, I went to the Xavier University in, I think, Cagayan. Somewhere in Mindanao. And I'm still waiting to hear back from them because I met them 2 years ago. I am a member of a lot of Filipiniana book groups in Facebook.
Right.
So I magically managed to get a copy of both. They're two volumes. Both really thick. Like, 1,000 plus pages each. And they're a very, very invaluable resource. Because the methodology that Demetrio used was something that I feel that a lot of researchers these days lack. Because a lot of the time, and I'm not the only one airing these grievances, but modern researchers would start with an idea or the hypothesis and just look for things that support the hypothesis instead of trying to be challenged and finding out new avenues where you can gain information. Like, I do face-to-face interviews, and it's there that I am continually surprised about how Philippine mythology, I don't like using the words Philippine mythology because there is no Philippine mythology. There are many mythologies in the and people have tried to correct me by saying it's wrong grammar. But I like to say folklores instead of folklore in the Philippines, just to hammer the fact that there is a plurality in the belief systems of the Philippines. And different ethno-linguistic groups and cultural communities have their own beliefs that I believe should be celebrated, because just like, it's something I learned in linguistics too, that every language is a carrier of culture, and each culture is the way a different person sees the world.
I was just wondering, maybe for the listeners who may not be as aware, maybe you can briefly give us an overview on languages in the Philippines, because it's not just clearly Tagalog and English. You know, there's always all these regional quote-unquote languages, and people still say, even when we were students, people say that, oh, Ilocano and Cebuano may are dialects, but they're not, you know, they are languages. So maybe you can talk about that. How many languages do we have in the Philippines? And
It depends who you talk to, but when I was in the linguistics department, we said we had 175 different ethno-linguistic groups. So an ethno-linguistic groups is a cultural community where it's speakers of a certain language and the culture that it conveys.
Right.
Now, a lot of people have this belief that a dialect is just a lower form of the language, but there comes this idea of mutual intelligibility. So if you have word usage A versus B, if they can understand each other, then they are descended from the same language.
Okay.
If they can't understand each other, and usually the threshold of mutual intelligibility is different. Like some research would be like, oh, 80% means they're the same language and their varieties are just dialects of each other. But usually if they don't understand each other at all, then they're separate languages. But if they can understand each other, then they're said to be descended from the same languages and they are dialect varieties. So there's, I always have to point this out because I'm a linguist. There's a belief that Filipino is the language of the Philippines and every other language in the Philippines is a dialect of Filipino, which is incredibly wrong.
Okay.
And there are also people that think that Filipino is different from Tagalog. Which it's not. A professor of mine, Sir Nolasco, who, when he was part of the Commission ng Wikang Filipino, he said that there is no structural difference between Filipino and Tagalog. And in fact, Filipino is just the dialect of the Tagalog spoken in Manila.
Okay. Huh. Some, actually, I might have not been, but it wasn't that clear to me as well, because we tend to use Tagalog and Filipino interchangeably. But so you said that Filipino is actually a dialect of Tagalog. Is that what you're...
that? Yeah, a lot of people, especially in the Commission ng Wika Filipino, would say that it's different because Filipino takes words from different Philippine languages, and that's what makes it different. Also, like when you talk of Philcomu, right?
I did Filipino have Filipino classes.
It's also like how researchers say that Filipino borrows from different words all around the Philippines and even English. That's what separates it from Tagalog.
Okay.
But it's like most of English's vocabulary is from French words. And English isn't French.
Oh, clearly not. Okay. Okay. So from that, I do want to ask though, like now that you have laid out, you know, the Philippine languages and then linguistics and of course stories, well, I'm sure you've cataloged them but also read them, I was wondering if you can start commenting on maybe what you've learned about us as a Filipino people from these stories. Like, what do these stories show? Because in some cases, in the same way Greek mythology shows a lot about the heart of the Greek people, or Norse mythology talks about the Norse people, let's say the Philippine folklore, what does it reveal about the Filipino people? Yeah. Besides having a lot of languages. Yeah, go.
The more I researched it, the more I came to a conclusion that there really is no Filipino people.
Oh.
That
hot take. Okay, why?
That's because like everyone believes in something, in their regions, their original beliefs, right? Like the Cordilleras have sort of the same belief systems. And like you'll see that in some of the cultural communities in Mindanao as well.
Yes.
So it's like the Philippines is a very diverse place. I said like we have a shit ton of cultural communities and ethno-linguistic groups. So like the Duray myth is different from the Bagobo myth. It's just distinct from Ilonggo and Karay belief. And you have the Ilocans and the Tibetans. And they're just very different. And it shows that there is no one universal experience that everyone in the Philippine archipelago has experienced. So, but again, because everyone like trades with each other, there are belief systems that are common around the archipelago, especially when talking about maritime trade, especially mainland South Asia, because a lot of beliefs that we have are influenced by Hindu Buddhist traditions. Like there are a lot of belief systems where they have seven layers of the world, or if not that, seven layers of heaven.
Right.
There are those, like, my favorite example to use is the moon eaters in Philippine myths. So there are creatures believed to be the cause of lunar and sometimes solar eclipses.
So creatures, there are more than one, not just the Bakunawa,
Yes.
which people are familiar with. So there's more. Okay, tell us more.
Yeah, I just did a talk about this a couple of weeks ago. So I have cataloged maybe around 15 different mythical creatures from different ethno-linguistic groups. So for example, the Bakunawa is from the Visayas, but there are different kinds of Bakunawa. That name has been given to a dragon that was for the story of the Bakunawa story that is most popularized in fiction right now is taken from Damiana Eugenio's Philippine Folk Literature series, but she had quoted an even earlier work from, I believe it was 1932 by Fern Buysser. And in his work, there were a lot, he was a priest. So there were a lot of references to Christian belief and revelation and the end of days and the dragon will eat everyone up. So that belief was not carried over to Damiano Eugenio's translation of that work. So that's just the main Bakunawa myth that everyone knows about. But Bakunawa is a term in Palawan, when you talk about the Bakunawa, it's a giant centipede.
Oh,
In
that's different.
Bohol, from a thesis by Paho in the 1950s, the Bakunawa is a bird.
Oh, that's a different.
And yeah, and in Maximo Ramos's work, he quoted a line from the Pavon manuscript. The Bakunawa is a fish, like a giant shark. And then these beliefs are reflections of Indian trade because the original source of these myths are from a Hindu myth where, so the gods wanted to churn the primordial ocean to get the Amrita or the elixir of immortality. They excluded the demons from imbibing in this liquor, but there was one demon, Steinhikeya, if I may be pronouncing that wrong,
It's okay.
but he it managed to fall in line and drink the elixir, and he became mortal. But the sun and the moon saw what happened and told the gods, and the gods struck him down and severed his head. So the belief is the demon, who now is called Raho or Kedu or Raho Kedu, wants revenge on both the sun and the moon. So when the head catches up to them, it swallows them. But because the head's just a head, it passes through it, showing the end of the eclipse.
Creepy.
Yeah. That's why, like, you have creatures, moon eater creatures that, like, in the Tagalog, it's called laho. And laho just means to be swallowed up by something. So there's a connection with the words used and the actual legend, which is what I found, like, during the writing process of my thesis.
So
So, yeah, so you have the laho, the Tagalog, you have the lawu or lao of the Kapampangans. You have Raho, which is a giant from the Batangas part of the Tagalog region. You have the Badina Mamang of the Surigaos. It just means like giant animal. But well, they made it and I cataloged it.
Oh my goodness. That's a
Yeah.
lot. That's fascinating. So, I mean, clearly they all like these 15 different moon eaters, clearly coming from different regions. Although
Yes.
there are different creatures, you know. I mean, one is a bird, the other one is a fish, another one is a centipede and a serpent. I mean, clearly one thing they have in common is that the Filipinos, or at least the people with residing in the area we know as the Philippines now, is fascinated, I suppose, inspired by these, well, natural occurrences, sometimes maybe dramatic. So maybe you can explain, you know, maybe why is that? Why these difference, but also why this common fascination with these phenomena?
Well, you have to explain things, right? It's a human, I won't say need, but it's a human
Tendency.
experience. Yeah, exactly. It's a human tendency to want to know why things are the way they are. And I also notice, and this is my thing, when we talk about creatures such as the Moon Eaters, are influenced by the environment that they're in. So you have like the Bagobo Minokawa, which is a bird, moon eater, that like there are a lot of different species of birds in the Philippines. It's very biodiverse. It's like some places where there are an abundance of like, okay. So there's this one myth called in the Ibalon, there are stories of flying sharks called the tib I call them pating na pagpakan because that's more in line with the people there, but people
So
translate
flying sharks.
yes,
Like how do they fly? Do they just
flying
do they
sharks.
flap their fins or what? Do they just jump and then fly or like how does that
Okay.
work? Yeah.
The theory as to why there are flying sharks is because there are fish that glide off over the top of the body of water that's there. So it's like people saw this and they're like, oh, maybe there were bigger sharks like that when the folk hero rescued the wait, this is the Ibalon from Bicol? I'm using that example to reflect the fact that these myths sometimes have basis in mundane things. So it's like the flying sharks came from the flying fish.
Interesting. So clearly it's their attempt at explaining these weird natural occurrences, especially dramatic things like an eclipse or even I suppose earthquakes and storms. Although
Yeah.
I think this is, I'm sure, related to other, well, other cultures have different explanations with like their gods. Perhaps maybe you can quickly, I'm sure there are, you know, a lot of gods, but I'm curious if you can remark, you know, what about the Philippine, I mean, do we have a Philippine pantheon of gods? Because the pre-colonial idea of God we all know is Batala. But then I think I've been reading some of your stuff, and there are clearly other gods for different regions. Perhaps in the same way, they have different roles and different domains. And perhaps maybe you can explain maybe how does their roles maybe differ, or maybe are they unique compared to say like the Greek mythology or Zeus or the Roman pantheon or the Odin and in the Norse
Yeah.
mythology? What do you think?
So what I've seen is that the gods are reflections of the material culture of these cultural communities or ethno-linguistic groups. So you have some gods that are like gods of the forge or gods of gold that are present in societies that are goldsmiths. You have, well, there are a lot of gods that are unique to the specific parts of the Philippines. Like in Pampanga, there's this belief in Dapu. Dapu is the mother crocodile on which the earth rests.
What? A mother crocodile?
Yeah,
What?
it's a female crocodile, and then the earth is on her back.
Why a
So
crocodile though?
because crocodile was a sacred as an animal held in sacred regard in various areas in the Philippines. Yeah, so the gods reflect the culture that they're a part of, but it's not like you can't really use the example of gods to have a full reflection of the society because it's like for the Greek pantheon at least, like the Greeks aren't all incestual. So yeah, and there's also like what defines a god because in some belief systems like there are no gods, there are just environmental spirits that people pay homage to. But this idea of a god is very Western in concept, not even just like Europe Western, but even like as close as Hinduism was to us.
Interesting.
So you have people like American anthropologists, folklorists, teachers, priests at the turn of the century telling stories about things that they don't believe in themselves. So you have Roy Franklin Barton, who did work with the Ifugaos, and this always sticks out in my head.
Yeah.
He said that the Ifugaos have more than 1,000 gods.
Wow, 1,000 gods.
Yeah.
Why so many?
Well, he broke it down into different municipalities. So like this town has like specific gods that have the same portfolio, the word portfolio I'm using as the domain in which god is associated with. Thank you, Dungeons and Dragons. But yeah, so it's like in this municipality, there is a god responsible for the hunt, responsible for agriculture, responsible generally. And then the name of that god, with the same portfolio, is different in another town in that same area. But there, like the plurality of gods, especially in the Ifugao context, is just like who do they worship and whose spirit can they reach out to? Because there are persistent beliefs that gods are just humans that reach the sky world. Because in some belief systems, you have a three-tiered world. So it's like the sky world, which is the upper world, the middle world, which is, well, Earth, and the lower world, where spirits go after, well, where some spirits go after their life in the middle world. But in some myths, they say that humans are descended from the inhabitants of the sky world. And sometimes the inhabitants aren't even seen as gods. They're just as
Gosh.
mortals that haven't descended. But there is longevity in the sky world belief system. So it's like they are functionally long lived. I wouldn't like necessarily say they're immortal.
I mean, I'm just a little, you're blowing my mind right now with that many. And first of all, I sense it's advantageous because you never have run out of things to write, you know, as a scholar of these kinds of topics.
Oh,
But I
yeah.
don't, yeah, but I don't know. I want to ask, like, what do you think about this? And does this say anything about our society being very fragmentary or very, you know, almost granular? The gods have maybe very granularly designated roles and maybe even, I don't know, domains. So I don't know. What do you think about this very diverse, how do you say, what's the word? Like
Belief system?
belief system. There we go.
Well, again, it just shows how different the people in the Philippines are from each other. And like you can see reflections of this disparity when you see like people who are proponents of federalism, for example. So you can see that they want to keep what is theirs because it's theirs. Like it is something unique and not something that you see everywhere else in the archipelago. And that belief like is reflected in the laws people try to pass, in the ordinances that they have, even in foreign belief systems. Like there's a syncretism between Catholicism and folk Catholicism in the Philippines. Like the way that some Spanish priests tried to evangelize the populace was to see the similarities between Catholicism and their religion, because like, myths are basically religion to people. And it's like when the patron saint of farmers, San Isidro, his myth was intertwined with the harvest god. So when they celebrate the harvest, they pray to San Isidro, Saint Isidore. Someone's gonna correct me if I'm wrong. But there's collaboration between what we think as foreign beliefs, which are just local beliefs with a different coat of paint.
So even to the point where even some images of Jesus or the Santo Niño are a bit are combined with folk culture. That's why they call this folk Christianity, like, or folk
Yes.
Catholicism, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's, you said plenty of about gods, but maybe before I move on from gods, I do want to ask though, I'm curious, like, do you have like a favorite god or god system to write about, or do you do all them equally? Or I don't know, is it something more interesting to you than others? among the gods or spirits?
I don't know. Like at this point, everything just mixes together.
Okay, all right.
But I'd like to take that opportunity to talk about how people get research wrong.
Okay.
Like there is this persistent meme. Well, there is a college meme. It's this post on Facebook where they said that there is a patron god of homosexuality in pre-colonial times.
I heard about that, yeah.
Which is not pre-colonial.
Oh.
Like, I'm an author, so I get the fact that you want to take creative license for some things.
Sure.
But as long as you make it known where it's from, like I got called out on using the demonized version of three gods from the Visayas. Well, from Bicol and the Visayas. In Bicol, they were seen as evil spirits. In the Visayas, they were seen as gods. But like I just made it clear, like this is not pre-colonial.
Okay.
This is a certain version that I'm using
that
may not hook up with your beliefs, but it's like it's still there and it was interesting, so that's why I wrote it. But what happened with the Sidapa and Bulan myth? Bulan is the boy moon that's considered the god of homosexuality, and Sidapa is said to be the god of death. And they live together on Mount Maja as being husbands. Well, being together, like I'm not, the husband thing came after because people were trying to fit in their belief systems.
Okay.
And they just wanted some, like I feel that people just wanted something to latch onto to, again, I said this before, to galvanize their own preconceived biases and what they believe about themselves. So,
there isn't a pre-colonial god of homosexuality.
There is an internet. Like the myth of the myth was propagated through lots of blog posts in the early 2000s. If you want to read more about this, Aswang Project has a good timeline.
Yeah.
And Jordan did his research on it. So
okay.
If you want to learn more about it, I really recommend just
search
up Sidapa Bulan Aswang Project.
Okay.
And
So, but there's still maybe contemporary people using pre-colonial, I suppose, imagery to, I suppose you could call it a form of fanfic, right? But people mistake it for that.
Like at a certain point, all stories are fanfic.
but the people mistake it for like, well, that's interesting, you know, because I'm sure it's difficult as a scholar to separate the, what's the word? How do I put it? Artifacts from the, or like maybe genuine artifacts, quote unquote, versus the contemporary fanfics. I mean, do you see that difficulty? Yeah.
It is not difficult.
Okay. How do you do it then?
If I'm being honest.
Okay.
Like, if you're a researcher, you know that there are biases in everything that is written. So you have to know who wrote what, if it can be corroborated. Because, like, one of the most famous sources of pre-colonial life in the Philippines, the Boxer Codex. So from there, you'll be like, oh, these are their styles of dress, for example. And then you're like, oh, these things were also documented by this other unrelated person or priest. Mostly it's priests. And they're like, oh, okay, so these two came from different sources, but they still corroborate each other. It's also like, again, with the Moon Eaters, the Pavon manuscript that Maximo Ramos's work quoted is controversial in that people don't believe it's an authentic source. But that's where he got the Bakunawa as a fish thing. Like, and when they looked at this other researcher's work, Mabel Cook-Cole, she was a folklorist who worked, Laura something, sorry. But she took down the story of the Minokawa of the Bogobo. So it's like, oh, there's this fish that's a moon eater and there's this bird that's a moon eater. So these similar belief systems are like, oh, maybe the moon eater myths corroborate this controversial piece of translation.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. It's far more complex than we realize, you know, but yeah, there's identifying the biases are important. I do, well, this is the October episode, you know, so I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you more about the aswangs or the monsters, the Filipino monsters. And I'm sure you've covered a lot of them. I'm not sure if you can say all of them, but most of them. I'm sure these are the ones that get most attention. Maybe in the same way you can comment about the gods, what can you say about the kinds of monsters that we make? And can you say what you think there's a common thread or a basis on how people do monsters, especially when I know that I'm also familiar that I suppose the well, one version of the origin of aswang is actually done by, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, Americans, the CIA, to scare locals.
Yeah. That was the PsyOps by, I forgot the name of the, I assume it was Colonel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like the story was they wanted to flush out rebels hiding in the mountains.
Yes.
So they would take victims and exsanguinate them and be like, oh, the aswang sucked out all his blood and the aswangs are now in the vicinity of the rebels.
Yeah.
So it worked because, okay. So what I found in cataloging these monsters, which is most of what I do, is that the sociological implications are that they want the most vulnerable members of society to be safe in the fact that they're the victims of these creatures. We have a lot of stories about aswang and the aswang derivatives, so like tik-tik, kwak-kwak.
So there are kinds of aswangs, not just one aswang. Okay.
Okay. All right, where do I start? okay, so the aswang, first of all, can refer to many different kinds of creatures. There are flesh-eating ones that in the Sugidanon epics of Panay, an aswang is a warrior who has ritually eaten human flesh. They can be viscera suckers. The viscera is the innards of a person. And this also relates to the fetus. So these are the more popular versions of the aswang, where they have the long tongue, a long red tongue that goes through a hole in the roof and then goes to the victims, usually a pregnant woman, almost always a pregnant woman, and sucks out the fetus or the viscera from the victim and then eats it whole.
So some can outright attack you, others can just sneakily, you know, camouflage and use their tongue. Ew, okay.
There are those that are also corpse eaters. So they only eat dead flesh. And this is where you can also see the magical powers of the aswang.
Okay.
Because it's said that some aswang, if you do not do the vigil for the dead, in some areas it's called the laraw, but like, even in modern Philippine cultures in the Philippines, where it's like the wake has to have lights, has to have people all the time, it's because the aswang can take the corpse of the victim and magically use a banana trunk. So they magic it up and it'll look exactly like the corpse while the actual corpse is being eaten by the aswang.
Oh, gosh.
There's also like mandurugo or blood drinkers. So these victims usually get married. These monsters usually get married to their victims. And then within like a few months after the marriage, like the man will be anemic. And then the mandurugo or blood drinking aswang would look pregnant. So after she fully drains her victim, she escapes that villager town and goes to the next one to do that again.
Oh, like a black widow.
Yeah. There are also two more kinds. One is like the witch, like aswang, who actively participates in using magic. So there are stories where to become an aswang, you can become one by eating human flesh or the bodily fluids of an aswang.
You ever test that?
I'm actually like the babaylan I was speaking of earlier. She tells me stories about the aswang that she has to fight.
Oh, as a real aswang.
Yeah, as a real aswang.
How does she, well, she fights them via like trece or like with the, yeah.
With there are okay, there are some spirit mediums that actually use physical force to fight aswang. Like there was one spirit medium I know that like actively draws out knives to be all like, "You're an aswang, I know what you are. If you're here tomorrow, I will kill you."
Oh, okay. Oh, that's so cool. Oh my gosh, the real life
Yeah.
dresses.
Yeah. Or was I? Oh yeah. So the witch like aswang actively use magic to do it, but they're different. In some areas, aswang and mangkukulam mean the same thing. In some of my research, I just to make it easier for me to catalog, I put the mangkukulam in a separate category. But witch like aswang are basically mangkukulam. And then you have aswang that are shapeshifters. Now, the interesting thing I found out was that aswang do not transform into reptile forms. It's always a boar, a cat, a dog, or a bird.
Why is that?
You guys as good as mine at this point.
Oh, that,
I yeah.
Oh, I'm curious though. I maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I did notice that a lot of the forms of Eswangs tend to be, well, female or feminine, like witches or like the black witch. Well, what's the one that marries you and then eats you? So
Mandurugo.
Mandurugo, yes. And it shows like this, I believe, I don't know if it's just one person's anxiety or a societal anxiety of like dishonest women. And Aswangs tend to be either, like what I mentioned, like in your face, or they can be tricky. They're quite intelligent. So what can you say about this? I suppose it represents like this anxiety or distrust of people, like shapeshifters. I think that it's common in a lot of mythologies, but what can you say about that?
It's actually very common in Southeast Asian mythology. Like the Manananggal for us, there are equivalent creatures in different areas of Southeast Asia. Like in Cambodia, they call it the Ap. In
Really?
Thailand, they call it the Krause. In Malaysia, in Indonesia, they call it the Leak. In Malaysia, they call it the Pinanggalan.
So in Southeast
So,
Asia, there's all a version of like a woman leaving her lower half and flying with bat wings. All of them, yeah?
actually, it in other areas, it's just the head and the entrails. We are unique in its having been just the upper half.
Okay, I see. But there's a thread there, you know,
Yeah.
similarities. That's interesting. I did not know that. And yet we always claim that the Manananggal is ours, you know, but apparently they're different kinds. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there are actually different kinds of Manananggal even within the Philippines. Like in Pampanga, for example, their Manananggal is called the Mangkukutud. The difference is that that creature can lay eggs. And if you crack open the eggs, they'll open up and you'll find different body parts. So eyeballs, fingers, that sort of thing. In Quezon province, they have the Iki or the Ike. They are male, which is departure from like the regular female Manananggal forms. You have like the Tanggar in Palawan, which elders joke is just Manananggal that speaks Kuyonon. Yeah. I have a book out about it, the Manananggal Manual,
The
so
Manananggal Manual. There's a manual. Wait, okay. Tell us what's in it besides, of course, the types. Like, is there like a to-do list on what to encounter when if you encounter a Manananggal or something? What's in it?
It's the weaknesses of the Manananggal, how to become a Manananggal, how to kill a Manananggal, and 15 different types of Manananggal from different areas of the Philippines.
That is so cool. I'm getting my copy soon. Yeah. Okay. Manananggal Manual. Okay. Well, you said so much on that, you know, and I'm sure we'll get more when you read your books. But as you know, a lot of these creatures of the night, you know, and the, you know, bloodsuckers, entrail suckers, shapeshifters have gotten a lot of attention in popular culture and even abroad. What can you say about that? Are we doing it well? How do you
I mean,
find the how we do it? Yeah, like our it's our
as a
appropriation.
create, yeah, as a creative, I think of course to say that all art is valid. but not all art is good.
Okay, fair enough.
So I gravitate to the ones that are well researched, but there are people that gravitate more to the ones that look great. I mean, there are a lot of really great graphic novels based on the the mythology class, El Arc Angel, Trece, of course. But yeah, it's really great to see the popularity that these stories have blossomed into. I wish that they do more research just to get the authenticity right.
Right.
Because part of what I want to see when I see art about a specific culture is if it's authentic to that culture, if people really believe in what these story, what the essence of these stories are. So like, again, like the sociological implications, like to keep the most vulnerable members of society out of the darkness so that they can be protected. And it's like, that is the moral of a lot of these stories. But then again, you have people that use like the Manananggal in children's books. So it's like, oh, this is your friendly neighborhood tik-tik. And it's like,
yeah.
That, I mean, to me, that misses a lot of the points. But
okay,
it's just like, your creative expression. I won't invalidate that.
Sure. And I mean, there's even like this new one, Ang Boyfriend Kong Crosswise, which talks
but,
about Manananggal, who is in a gay relationship. Kind of makes you, brings to top or bottom a different meaning, don't you? So there, yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
But okay. But let's talk about maybe of the international one. Do you have any, are there any examples of like maybe positive or good attention from like international community or foreign, maybe foreign scholars, foreign media? I do know that there, in a few shows, they have mentioned the Aswang in the American accent, so Aswang or something.
Aswang. Yeah.
Or there's, do you know the, in Tick Tick, or do you know the, apparently the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina featured a
Batibat.
Yes, Batibat. Or she's called Batty Bat.
Batty Bat.
But she's completely different. But they appropriated our name, you know. That's a Filipino demon. Yeah. So what do you think? Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, maybe they just want the virtue signal or get the rallying points by using the terms. And it's like the Batty Bat, for example, is supposed to take the form of a large obese woman who sits on your chest, which is a reflection of the old hag syndrome or sleep paralysis, which is why she's referred to as the dream demon. So it's like, and then the Sabrina show just didn't use that. It's like, this is a very interesting creature that your audiences will still be surprised by the authenticity and the originality.
Yeah.
And you just don't use it. I mean, it's like, what's the
point?
They
did get the dream aspect. Like, she did, you know, like, what do you call that? She did a change your dreams and control your dreams, but not in the way that it's originally intended. I think we were one of the earliest, I suppose, examples of a sleep paralysis demon, which is like common, like a common idiom right now. But are we one of the first ones who created a creature to explain that? Or I don't know.
I haven't done comparative studies on that personally, but it's a pretty like, it was cataloged a few hundred years ago and may stretch or even earlier than that.
Right. Okay. Now, there, I mean, there's clearly a lot that, well, a lot of variety now, and you've done a lot of work yourself on popularizing these. Perhaps maybe you can talk about, you know, maybe the impact of the work that you've done, you know, I mean, maybe toot your own horn a bit, you know, but, and maybe talk about what more needs to be done with regards to all these stories, all these creatures, these spirits and gods and goddesses. So maybe, yeah, just reflect on the journey that you've had throughout these years. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, since it's October, I always get called as a expert testimony for different mythical creatures, which I despise, because a lot of the shows that contact me do not have respect for my time.
Oh my.
They'll be like, oh, can we interview you later tonight? And I'm like, wait, what? And I don't want to name the show,
Okay.
but their research teams don't talk to each other. Because, like, during the course of a week, I get two separate calls from the same show, and they wouldn't know anything about what the other side is doing. And I'm just like, guys. But, like, some of my fictional stories have gotten a bigger reach than I had expected.
Okay.
Like, for example, the Moon Eater Laho, I did a story about it, connecting it to the Blood Moon, and the Blood Moon is just a total lunar eclipse. So I thought, like, okay, there's a connection. I can use it, make 1,000 words, that should be fine. And then now people are like, oh, the Laho is the serpent of the Blood Moon. And I'm like, did I do that? That my fault? Yeah. But yeah, I've gotten like a lot of reach, a lot of local and international publications have gone to me. I have what I really like is when people go to me for help with research. Like, I don't claim to be an expert at this. I just have been doing it for a while, so I know more than most people. But when I take others on a journey with me, with the research, that's really where I get like, yeah, this was worth it. But yeah, there are still a lot more things that need to be done. First is more documentation. Like, we in the Philippines, there is an untapped resource of cultural bearers, and frankly, just like really old people that know the myths and legends of their specific locality. When I did my thesis, I was fortunate enough to have a friend whose lola in Aklan knew about different creatures from that area. And that's where I found out about the Idaemonon, which is a creature that lives underground and goes to the top world by pointing out its fingers. And the Bawa, which is like this centaur that eats river shrimp. So it's like, if you have the opportunity to ask like the matriarch or the patriarch of your clan about these things, like, I guarantee you'll get an Aswang story. If you're in Mindanao, you'll get a Busao story. If you're from Capiz, you're definitely going to get an Aswang story and things like that. Like, there, that resource should be realized, because like they're gonna die,
Oh no, yeah.
and they're gonna take those stories with them. And if they're not gonna die, the whole culture as a whole is going to choose modernity, because it's like that's where the money is, that's where they think a better life would be for their families. And you can't really disparage them for that. It's like they just want what's best for them, and to them, what's best is assimilating to a larger culture and forgetting their roots, as it were.
Maybe is there anything you want to ask for, say, the government, you know, in terms of this kind of endeavor and maybe preserving these cultures or research?
Okay, so we're me and my friend Maitaru are doing this project in the Davao area called Project Local Heritage. Like, a lot of the ethnolinguistic groups are under the protection of the NCIP, or the National Commission on Indigenous Peoples. But specifically for local heritage, we want to introduce the culture of the different ethnolinguistic groups around the Davao area through print and ebooks, YouTube videos, feature-length short film. So we're doing this with the different cultural communities there, like the Bogo Boklata, the Obo Bonobo, the Blaan, the Mandaya, the Kamayo, the Tiruray or Tiduray. So they're in like the Gumalang, Sarangani, Davao Oriental area. So for that project, if you guys want to donate, you can look at gogetfunding.com. It's titled Local Heritage Book Project. So even if you don't donate, a like and a share would be really appreciated. But yeah, so what we're doing is we're building connections with the Datus and the different leaders of these cultural communities. So we get into contact with them, we contact the local Datu or the barangay captain, then we first apply for NCIP approval.
Mm.
Then if we get the...
Okay.
Okay, so we apply for NCIP approval, then we meet with the either the tribal council or the IPMR. So it's the Indigenous People's Mandatory Representative. Then when we present the project, if they approve our research and the things that will come from our research, we will do interviews. And then all pictures from our photographer will be turned into storyboards. Our artists will be given specific direction so that we can not appropriate from their culture.
Okay.
Like, and cultural appropriation has been like this hot topic for a long time. There's this resource, like there's a PDF file that I also shared on my Facebook page about how not to culturally appropriate the community. And one of the biggest points there was you have to take the journey together. Like, you can't just go somewhere and be like, I like this data, I'm going to use it. Okay. And never talk to them again. Like, brand, reaching out an olive branch is very important, especially when you talk about myths, because again, to some people, myths are religion, and it is very important to their way of life.
Right. Huh. Well, that's a beautiful way to cap off this conversation. Thank you very much, Carl. In fact, I just, it's far, far more diverse and far more larger than we anticipated. You know, I mean, forget Pokemon. Yeah, I think there are far more kinds of, I don't know if you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there are almost as many, if not more, Aswangs than there are Pokemon. That's a, there's opportunity for that. But also, I mean, before we make a franchise out of that, remember that these spirits and these creatures are products of tradition and community. And it's a good opportunity to learn from, you know, the people within our country. And they're not just Halloween ideas and talking points, but also, like what you said, cultural property. I don't know, maybe, well, you mentioned the document, say how not to culturally appropriate, you know, but that's the beautiful thing you said was to travel with these communities, travel with, you know, people of our country. And I second the call to support the project Local Heritage. All right. If the links will be in the episode description, please do what you can. Sometimes any amount will do, but a like and share will do. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you, Carl, for giving us a quick overview. And I'm sure, well, had a bit too much fun. You know, it's maybe asked a few more questions, but I'm sure everyone appreciated your answers to these pressing questions, you know. All right. So now we'll cap off the episode with the last segment, which is recommendations, where me and the guest will recommend other supplementary material sources. Could be a book, movie, series, comic, or maybe even websites that you can consume and maybe look over if you want to learn more about this topic. So, you know, Carl, as a scholar and, well, I could like to call you an expert, well, more than most people. If you know any other interesting materials that people can look into if they want to know more about our, let's say, myths, folklore, monsters, etc.
Okay, so I would really, really recommend Maximo Ramos's series, especially his book, Creatures of Philippine Lore Mythology. That was my introduction. But what he did was he used Western concepts to define Philippine creatures. That's why he has like demons and dragons, and it's like they're close, but not, they don't really encapsulate what the creature is, but it's still a good read.
Right.
The Soul Book by Dimitrio Cordero Fernando and Ziel Sita.
Lots
of great things there. Different mythical creatures, different origin stories for the world. You have, there's a controversial one called Outline of Philippine Mythology by Hokano. You can, it's easy to get, but in some cases he didn't put out where he got the data from. So a lot of academics like dismiss it because there's not, like, they didn't do due diligence. If you can, if you're lucky enough to find Damian and Eugenio's Philippine Folk Literature series, buy them. Because I'm not sure if they're out of print, but I haven't seen it in bookstores yet. There used to be a bunch of copies in Fully Booked in BGC, but
yeah,
I think people like found them and hoarded them.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah. Online, Aswang Project is a great resource. Jordan did this documentary series, especially on the Aswang. He found some very interesting things, like how the Aswang belief is also linked to a specific hereditary disease that could be traced to Panay, specifically in that area. They also came out with a translation of Ferdinand Gumentritz's Dictionary Mythologico de Filipinas. That's also good. Resource. It's on Shopee now. Again, if you guys want to rewatch Stress It, it's on Netflix. There are a lot of interesting comics coming out now. There's this one called The Book of Lore. If you want, go search up Art of Edoy on Facebook. He has a page. It's because since October, my page does this thing every year we call Halimaween. It's basically our answer to Inktober. So every day it's a different prompt from a different mythical creature in the Philippines. And yeah, you'll see a lot of really good art, even if you search for like Halimaween. We started it 2018. So if you look at like Halimaween 2020, 2021, you'll find a lot of like very interesting interpretations of mythical creatures by different Filipino illustrators.
Okay. Although I'm curious, so while you're here, do you know any movies that maybe, honestly, I'm aware that they've got it a lot wrong, you know, but maybe that comes close to getting some of these, well, creatures correctly?
Well,
yeah.
Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Is there a specific one? Because there's a series, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a series. There's the one with the Manananggal. Sorry, I forgot which specific one it was, but that was like one of the awakenings I had. Like, there are actual creatures from the Philippines that are scary. More recent ones like Nocebo.
Nocebo. Okay. This is the one with Chai? Chai
Panettiere. Yeah.
Is that an Amazon or Netflix? I think, yes, Netflix.
Netflix.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good one.
There's also, I don't know if it's out yet, but there's another movie called In My Mother's Skin. It should be out on Amazon this year. I'm not sure if it's out yet.
What's that about? Without spoiling, yeah.
I don't know how to say it without spoiling, but it does have an interesting graphical illustration about the different myths of the Philippines. Like they twisted it into a different way that's still authentic, but original as well.
Yes. Wow. Okay.
There's also like Edgardo Samar's Nilalang na Kagilagilalas. It's pretty much an encyclopedia of different mythical creatures from the Philippines. He actually expanded it because originally it was 101 Nilalang na Kagilagilalas. And then they just took out the number and just added more creatures.
Okay.
You can find it in National Bookstore.
Or I'll link that too. Yeah. Another interesting. I look good. It's a bit pricey, but yeah, I'll recommend it to the on the episode notes.
There's this book called Song of the Mango and Other New Myths.
Okay,
it's based on Philippine mythology. It's pretty good. I really recommend it. You can get it from Ateneo Press.
Yes.
Also, UP Press has a collection of translated epics from Panay. Done by Alicia Magos with collaboration from Caballero.
Yeah.
Which is the last name of the epic chanter.
Right. Sorry, I just realized you said Panay like twice, you know. What's with Panay and these mythics? Are they more haunted than others or are they just more imaginative? What do you think? What's with Panay? Yeah.
They're more recorded.
Okay.
Because everyone there has a story about the Aswang. It even said Capiz is the Aswang capital of the Philippines. And it's like, what? Because my dad's family's from Iloilo. I was there for a research thing for a completely unrelated topic.
Yeah.
But we were supposed to go around cataloging languages in different barangays. And there was one specific barangay that they would not let us go to because they said it's full of Aswang. And it's like, now I want to go there more.
But, that's a recommendation to go to Panay. If you personally, are there actual incidents or people are attacked by Aswang? Like there are some people who are claimed to be possessed by demons. You know, I sent it to you earlier.
Yeah, there are. There are lots of stories. Like the Babaylan I said that says she fights as one is from that area.
Goodness. So you might be able to find them as among hunters. But just be careful, you know. Don't try this at home, kids, you know. But if you're an adult, go try or contact your local, what do you call them? Swang hunter?
Albolario.
Albolario. Contact your local Albolario. All right. Anything else?
I am missing some things. I can't really remember right now. The works of Carl de Mesa and Yvette Tan. Yvette's going to kill me. I forgot the title of her book. Yeah.
We'll put it down in the
Waking the Dead.
Waking the Dead.
Yeah. I was with them because I got put in a list of modern myth makers in the Philippines.
Whoa.
And their names also popped up. But yeah, so Yvette, Carl, Vida, the author of the Songs of the Mango. Yeah, they're all authors that I recommend.
Wonderful. Okay, thank you very much, Carl. That's a long list, but definitely there I'll get my own copy of these books myself soon. One at a time, obviously, but yeah, and even these movies. You know, I'm in mostly in academic sources and fictional sources. I defer to you since, but I do have two materials that I would like to recommend, and both are about the Manananggal, movies about the Manananggal. And two of them are not of necessarily equal quality, but they do represent two clashing utilizations or appropriations of the Manananggal, but they're very two different, but very diverting and very interesting interpretations of the Manananggal. The first one is the Manananggal sa Unit 23B by Prime Cruz. It was released in 2016. Yeah, it's a good movie. It's definitely about a girl and a guy meets, and one of them is a Manananggal. You know, but it's framed as a mumblecore indie love story. It's also an interesting way to humanize the creature of the Manananggal and say, like, how would she act in urban Manila? It's an interesting to think about, you know. A lot of these creatures are from the countryside, rural areas, you know, in like far-flung areas. But what would they do in this kind of area? And what do they think about? How would they flirt? How would they fall in love? And that's for me, it's not only like an interesting idea, a story idea, but it was also well-filmed. You know, it kind of makes urban Manila sound look more spooky and magical. Although it's not a horror story, there's a lot of definitely scary moments, you know, but it's really a interesting meditation on the Manananggal. And another Manananggal movie, which might be controversial, but I suggest you watch it side by side with this. Ang Manananggal na Nahahati ang Puso by Daryl Yap. And we've talked about him before. It's a bit more of a comedy. It's about a foreigner, Marco Gallio, who stumbles, I think it was in Panay, I can't remember, but I'll double check, on this island that claims that there are a lot of mythical creatures like the Manananggal, the Aswang, etc. But it turns out it is actually, and this is a cynical take on this, they're actually ruses done by, how do you say, con artists who try to earn money from foreigners and tourists that don't know any better. So they say, oh, you want to see Manananggal? Pay us here, stay in this hotel. And at the same time, one of them is like an apprentice, you know. And on the one hand, the way they handle these stories, it's supernatural and it sounds like a ruse, but there's still truth within these stories. I think that's why we are, we continue to look at these stories today, not because necessarily they're real, although clearly, according to Carl, you know, you say that there are some albularios that fight real Manananggals, you know, we don't know, we'll see. But yeah. I think the secret anxieties of the human beings that made these stories are represent do real true feelings, and that's actually quite interesting. Like, for example, the way that they did the Manananggal, the story, the myth of the Manananggal says that the reason why she left her body is for her to escape because she was a slave chained by a pre-colonial master. So that's an interesting thing. Like, you make me wonder, why do they like separate their body parts? And it's a very interesting, well, logic there is maybe to leave behind and escape when you have no other choice. So that's an interesting interpretation. It's the story, well, the movie itself is it can be a bit of a corny, lowball humor, but it's entertaining and it's something to think about to look at side by side alongside the Manangasa Unit 23B. But it's one of my favorite monsters to think about. Like, yeah, why? There are a lot of modern interpretations. Like, why would they separate body parts? So that's always interesting. It's always so creepy.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you very much for listening to this very interesting discussion on the diversity of Philippine folklore. Carl, where can our listeners look into more of your work? Please let you have anything else to promote?
Just go to our website, phspirits.com. That's where all of our stories and illustrations are.
Mm-hmm.
We are also like physically in a lot of the comics conventions.
Mm-hmm.
So on October 7, we're at Comic Area at Robinson's Galleria.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in Mega Mall for Comiket on mm-hmm. October 21 and mm-hmm. 22. We're also doing a talk at Bolo Coffee Club in Makati Poblacion on the 14th of October. I don't know when this is going to be released. So,
well, definitely in time for those. So please do check Philippine Spirits, you know, when you get the chance. So thank you, Carl. And hopefully you'll continue
your
research.
Me.
Things are happening. Yes. Hopefully, you know, you'll sell out all your merch. Definitely. They're great merch. I'll get my own copy someday. Okay. Thank you. The PI podcast can be found in a lot wherever you can get your podcast, primarily in Anchor and Spotify and YouTube. If you have any questions, comments, or messages, you may directly message us at our Facebook page or email us at pipodcastph@gmail.com. But until the next episode, magandang gabi, mga ka-PI.